This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to read a good book. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, back again, Robert Dugoni, and his new book is quite amazing. It took my breath away, and I am so happy to welcome him back to talk about this book. It's called The World Played Chess, and he's a master. We're talking about chess, we think about chess masters, and in this book, he's become an absolute master writer. Hi, Bob, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much. That was a very kind introduction. I appreciate it very much.
Well, you know, I read so many books, but every once in a while I get a book that just makes me feel so humble and so honored to be able to talk to an author. Because in your case, you know, I love all your books. You know, the detective books are fantastic and always exciting. But this book, well, when we talk about kicking it up a notch, this is amazing. This book just touched my heart. I think it comes at just the appropriate time. It's about Vietnam, but right now we're thinking about this whole idea of playing checkers when the world is playing chess. And I think the way you've approached this story, telling it from the point of view of three different young men at the age of 18 and looking at it, is so relevant, particularly after what happened with the 13 men and gal we lost. I felt so strongly that this was this book came out at a very important time. I think people need to reflect on the entire thing. But in a way, it's easier to do it through Vietnam right now, because I'm not sure many of us can handle the Afghanistan thing. So I think this book actually came out at the perfect time.
Well, thank you. I hope so. You know, what I tried to do was I tried to bring a personal story, a human story, to what often for so many of us is... is a global story, and we forget, I think, sometimes the impact that happens to the young men and the young women now who have to, you know, go through the experience. And, you know, this was an experience that I had when I was 18 years old, meeting these two men and really having sort of my dreams and my illusions shattered, which I think is a universal trait for men, for women, for people of all ages. And I think this, it's going to be poignant in terms of young men and what they they're going to experience in their lives. I think for parents of young men, I think for women who go through these similar experiences, we all go through them, but we all have those pivotal moments in our lives that really change the path and course of what we're going to do, you know, forever.
Well, you tell this story. It's so remarkable. Tell us about the three young men and how you've built it over the years from 1979, 1967, and 2016, and the different layers that you've put into this book, because it's all so seamless. It flows from, you know, story to story, and I was enthralled just reading the book.
Thank you. Yeah, so Vincent Bianco is a middle-aged man who now has an 18-year-old son who's preparing for his final year of high school, and of course then he'll be going off to college. And in the summer before that senior year, Vincent receives a package in the mail, and that package is from a gentleman by the name of William, who Vincent worked with when he was 18 years old back in 1979. William sends to Vincent his journal. It was a journal that he kept while he was in Vietnam. And he basically says to Vincent, you know, thank you. If it hadn't been for you that summer, I'm not sure I would still be here. and I wanted you to have this. All I ask is that you read it in the order it was written, so that you will understand. And Vincent doesn't completely understand what he means by that, but he starts to read William's journal of the year that he spent in Vietnam, and it becomes very poignant to the experiences that he's having with his own son at 18 years of age, and the importance of living life fully and appreciating every moment of life. There's something that William says in that journal and said to Vincent when they worked together back in 1979 on a construction crew, and that is that growing old is a privilege, it's not a right. And, you know, when you're 18 years old, you never really think about that. So what the journal does is it brings William back to his summer of 1979 when he was 18 years old, working with these two men, particularly William, about and learning about what happened to them while they were serving in Vietnam.
Well, you know, as I said, there's layer upon layer in this book. And what I really enjoyed, just first of all, you managed to take us back in time. And I felt that so strongly. But then the part that you wrote about Vietnam, now, some of it is so, even now today, when we read about it, it's hard to imagine. Now, I've been involved deeply for the past 10 years in a Vietnam project having to do with the pilots, the F-105 pilots. So I know a great deal about that war. And all these young men went into it, and of course, none of them knew anything.
Right.
You know, it was different from World War II, where we understood where the enemy was and where we were going. But here, in you know, across America, in small towns, and you know, just ordinary citizens didn't have an idea, didn't have a clue what was going on. So when we're talking about playing chess, I mean, the world was playing chess, but for Americans, young people, they had no idea.
Right. It really changed everything. It changed how battles are fought. It changed how young men, you know, what they were expected to do. They, you know, the men that and the women that went over to Vietnam and the men that fought in the bush, it was unlike anything they had ever experienced before. And what I was really trying to do was just bring that moment of, you know, the one moment they're living in New Jersey or South Carolina or California, and the next moment they're on a helicopter and they're being flown to a base somewhere in the mountains of you know, of Vietnam, and they're going out on patrols, and you know, their life was just altered forever because of that experience. There was no real patriotic duty, if you will. There was no, you know, people at home weren't looking at this as our duty to go out and to stop, you know, Nazism and all this. It was billed as a war to prevent communism, but you know, here we were really invading a country. And you know, there's a lot of debate about the Vietnam War. It was something that always fascinated me because I was 18 in 1979, and I do have an older brother, and I did have older brother-in-laws. So it was something that was always on the periphery of my attention back then, and I just found it to be very fascinating. But you know, as poignant as William's journal turns out to be, I think it really goes beyond that concept of war. It goes back to that moment in all of our lives where we have to decide, okay, we're no longer children anymore. We're an adult, and we have to sort of break away and find our own path, and what path is that going to be? And, you know, unfortunately for some of these men and women, that they didn't get that choice. That choice was made for them, and it changed them forever.
Well, very much like, you know, 9/11 changed a generation of young men and women who took a different path, who decided, you know, to step forward. And now we have another generation who actually just don't, you know, they're watching the 20th anniversary and they're thinking, well, you know, that's in the past. But again, we're talking about there are big things going on in the world. The master chess game is going on, and we are really just those little checkers being bounced around a board.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. You know, the 9/11 anniversary is, you know, the 20-year anniversary is very poignant to this, what you're saying about this book, because it is a moment that changed the world for all of us. It changed the way we travel. It changed the way we think about travel. It changed the way we think about working in high-rise buildings. You know, it's one of those moments in history that, you know, changed the world forever. And you know, in a sad way, I think for many of us who have children and have to have our children go through, you know, so many of these things. I think what we're going through currently with the COVID crisis is another thing that has changed the world forever, really. I don't know if we'll ever really get back to where we were before the COVID crisis struck. You know, will we ever be able to get on a plane without wearing a mask? Will we feel comfortable doing that? And so there are those moments in our life, in history, that really changed the world for all of us. And that's really what this book is about. It's about, you know, one of those moments in life that the world has changed. And how are you as a person, how are you as an individual going to respond to it? What impact is it going to have on you? And how is it going to change your life? And that's a question I think that everyone has to deal with and has to answer that question. Who are we and what type of person are we going to be?
Well, as you were writing this book, you know, just reading it, I would imagine that the characters just took over, you know, that they became so much a part of you. I love, of course, William, but just the little, you have these little bits and pieces where you, and I thinking of that word, really, bits and pieces, where you have characters who I fall in love with in a few pages, like Easy, and I get tears in my eyes when I think about him. It's just, yeah. You know, and you do it, you're such a great writer. You know,
Thank you.
I just, over the years, you've written so many wonderful books, both standalone and of course, your wonderful series. But how you can take and write a few pages about one person, and you'll never, anybody who reads this book will never, ever forget that. You know, that character, and when you write about his mother, I cried. I just stopped and cried. It was so emotional, and it's so touching. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing writing.
Yeah, you know, it's thank you very much. That's the nicest compliment really anyone can pay a writer, to have characters that move you so profoundly is really what we're striving for, what we're going for. You know, I look at it as a gift. I look at it as a gift that I was blessed with, that God gave me. You know, there's certain things I can't do, you know, that other people can do far better than I can. But, you know, one of the gifts that God gave me was the ability to tell a story. And years ago, I came to the realization, the understanding as a writer, that stories are not about plot points. They're not about necessarily what's going to happen next and what's going to happen next and what's going to happen next. They're about people, and they're about how moments in life profoundly impact people. And, you know, every day has the potential to profoundly impact us. And so when I write now, I really try to focus not so much on what the story is about, but who the story is about. And why this particular character has come to me, and what is it about this particular character? What does he or she want to say? What is the point of her being in this novel at this moment? And I try to just sit back and let the characters write the story. And I know that how that sounds to some people, but it's really the truth. And I've heard so many very talented authors say similar things.
Well, I think. You know, I think it's true. I think the characters did take over, because one of the things I thought as I was near the end of the book, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, you, Robert Dugoni, might have gone to Vietnam. And all of this brilliance, all of this ability would have been lost. And I got so sad thinking about it, how many of the ones that we lost. And I just started crying, thinking of all of the thousands and thousands of young men, mostly men, because women were sort of not in the front lines there. But I think what we lost, what, you know, you've given all of these years now to writing wonderful books, filling our lives with great stories. But all of those more than 50,000 young men died, and we lost all of it. We lost all of their stories. We lost not just them, but everything that they could have given us. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. It is heartbreaking. And I think that's the most heartbreaking thing about losing someone at such a young age. I've thought about that exact same thing so often. You know, we may have lost the person that would have cured cancer. We may have lost the person that would have found the vaccine for COVID. We would, you know, we who knows what we lost? We might have lost a Bill Gates. You know, we might have lost a Steve Jobs. We might have lost, you know, so many people that have been so profound in this world and have changed this world. You know, with their foundations, with their charitable work, and all those other people out there that do such wonderful things. And you know, you're exactly right. There is a sense of loss. And, you know, for me, when I was 18 and I went to work with these two men, that the thing that I remembered most is that shattering of my own illusion that, you know, that I was going to live forever, that I was invulnerable, that I could do whatever I wanted to do. And I really learned through these men that's not the case. And, you know, I was blessed where I grew up, but it was time to learn what the world was really about, and that can be a very painful process for many of us.
Well, you know, you mentioned, you know, in the beginning, reliving history. You know, if we don't learn from history, we're going to relive it. And unfortunately, I think so often, and it happened. You know, if you don't know your enemy, and if you don't know your goals, you can get yourself into a big mess, like we did here, and it's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, and that's why I think this book is very important. It's you know, books come along and they're great and they're, you know, wonderful. I love them, but not every book is going to last, you know, 50 years or 100 years. But I have a feeling this book, The World Played Chess, is going to be one of those books that people will go back to many years from now, and because it gives a perspective on the war that I think is important, because it does approach it from an 18-year-old boy's mind, and that idea that life can be so wonderful, and then just it can be ripped away. So I believe that this is a really, really important book.
Well, thank you. I, you know, I hope that when people read it, they walk away also with a sense of hope and a sense of faith and belief in the good that exists in people, that despite all the trials and traumas and tragedies that exist in our lives, we persevere and we push through, and that allows us to experience those joyous moments. You know, and I don't want to give anything away about the book, but I hope that people, as they're reading it, you know, they read it all the way to the very end, and they realize that there's a message there, and there's a message that's delivered by so many young men and women who are able to go through, you know, such difficult times, and come out of it and find a place in the world, find a life, find something that's joyous to them, and understand really what the true meaning of that is. I think a lot of us get swept away too often in our careers or in other things, and we lose sight of what's truly important in life. And it takes those moments, you know, to bring us back to realizing and understanding that, like novels, you know, life is not about what we do next and what we do next and what we do next. It's about the people in our lives and who we love and who love us. And that's really what brings us our joy.
Well, you use the right word when you're talking to me. I'm so glad that you use the word joyous, because I always end all of my letters, I always say, be joyful. Just find that joy. And I think that's exactly what you do in this book. You do, you make us, you just fall in love with some of these characters, and you care so much about them. And I particularly liked, you know, at the end, you have a large section of acknowledgments, and I thought that was also, it was a wonderful thing to read, because what you put into the story is also what you got from other people.
Right, absolutely. You know, I wanted to point out, you know, I didn't serve in Vietnam, and so, you know, I found some people that were willing to talk to me. A lot of veterans, you know, did not want to talk. But I did find some people, and they directed me to books, and I read a lot of books, and I read a lot of firsthand accounts of, you know, the young men that were over there and what they went through. And, you know, I just kept reading and reading and reading, and I watched movies, and I read. I was fortunate. I have a good friend who was over in Vietnam. He was a gunny sergeant, and he was able to provide me, you know, manuals, and to provide me counsel, and to read my manuscript and tell me, make sure that I got it right so that I understood the Marine experience in Vietnam. And of course, Ken Burns's, you know, incredible documentary on Vietnam was a, you know, another source. And I, you know, really, I did what I always do, Patsy, which is I kept reading until the stories began to repeat themselves, because for so many young men, that's what happened. They went through the same experience, just different places and at different times. And so when all the stories began to sort of repeat themselves, I knew that I had read enough to understand what it was like to be there. And of course, then there was, you know, there were those stories that I did remember being told by William and by Todd, you know, about what they had been through. They didn't talk about it often, but they would. There were those moments where they would start to discuss it. And what it was like to be over there. And it was just really hard for me to imagine. I thought, you know, what would I have done to one moment, you know, I've graduated from high school in Burlingame, California, and the next moment I'm on a transport to a military base, you know, where I'm just, everything is going to be completely and totally changed.
Well, Bob, I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you for having me.
You have given me a book that I know it will stay with me and in my heart. And I think I will never stand at a kitchen sink and look out the window without thinking about you, because this is great writing. And the name of the book is The World Played Chess, and it's by Robert Dugoni. And you have a website, which is... Robert Dugoni.
www.robertdugonibooks.com.
That's it, robertdugonibooks.com. And people can go there and find out about all of your other, I mean, you have three series, right? There's the David Sloan one. And of course, I mean, the Tracy Crosswhite series is, that one's amazing. So I'm hoping that you're going to come out with some more books and you'll be back on the program soon.
I look forward to it. I'm in the process of writing new ones, and I'm looking forward to sharing them with the readers.
Okay. Well, my listeners love you. I know that they're really going to embrace this book, because I tell them this is a wonderful book. The World Played Chess, and it's available wherever books are sold and hopefully in bookstores that are now open again. And Bob, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I have to wipe my eyes, and we'll be right back after.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And boy, it is a joyful day because I have a guest that I've been waiting for, and this is really exciting. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Barbara Lynn Prost. I think I pronounced it right. I have to check with her, but she'll tell me because she's talkative. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Patsy. It is Prost. That was close enough. You know, this is so great. When I have to tell everybody, when Patsy and I talked together a few months ago, We fell in love, and so we have to do this again. So here I am.
Oh, yeah. And it's a good, and just in time, because we have something really exciting happening in a few days. So, you know, it's just wonderful again to talk to you. And as I said, what I love your two of your books. Well, your two books. I think the third one, Queen of the Owls, is fantastic. But I have to say that the sound between the notes just grabbed me so much. I was enthralled with that book, partly because, of course, you talk about Schubert in that book, and that he's always been one of my favorite composers.
Oh, that's so cool. You know, here's the secret. I actually wrote that book first, but it wasn't right. So what happened, I don't know if you want me to start?
Yeah, sure. Tell us.
Well, you know, that I do play the piano, and I had written also I'm a mother by adoption. So there's another theme in that book is about adoption and what is it to be part of a family? Where do I come from? Where do I belong? What is it to be a mother, to have a mother? All of that. So I had written that book, and it just wasn't right. I was going to publish it, and something in me said, don't. So I put it aside, and I wrote Queen of the Owls, which, you know, really was kind of, came to me just as a whole. It wasn't a book I agonized over. It was just from the deepest part of my spirit. And then during the course of doing the final drafts of Queen of the Owls, I took an intensive piano seminar, and I understood something about music that I'd been missing, which was that my protagonist in the early version had sort of a chip on her shoulder. You know, she just was feeling like she had something to prove. And I realized that if you love music, you can't play music with a bitter heart. People who love music are generous. They want to give. And suddenly I understood music, and I understood her differently. And I redid the book, and it came out to be the book that you now love. So it's a lesson for me is about sometimes you have to grow as a person in before you're ready to tell a particular story.
Wow. And you and the story, as I said, I love it. The minute I started it, and of course she's going to play a Schubert, and I was so thrilled. And the entire story, I just grabbed me. And I was, what I love about Suzanne was that, yeah, you got her right. You know, whatever she was before, you got her right in this book.
Yeah, I think so, because she wants to do right by the people she loves, but she wants to do right by herself, too. And isn't that the conflict that we all feel in our lives, you know? Those two things need, how can I embrace both of them somehow? And, you know, she makes some mistakes, and, you know, there is that whole thing in the book, which I think really it is a page-turner. So many people have told me that when they got to a certain point of the book, they literally had to stay up all night to finish it.
It's true. It is a real page turner. Well, so is, I mean, the Queen of the Owls is a fantastic book.
Yes.
And of
yes.
course, it's centered around, well, Georgia O'Keeffe plays a big role in that book. And of course, anybody who loves Georgia O'Keeffe will just appreciate this book so much because you really understand Georgia O'Keeffe. And there's the main character, Elizabeth, in some ways, it was sort of funny. There's sections where I was smiling, and there's a section. I don't want to give away the story, but there, when the photographer...
I can't say it,
but when he says your face, when he does that, I thought, oh, my goodness, Elizabeth, watch out, you're going to be on a roll here. So, you know, but your research, you obviously know Georgia O'Keeffe's work very well because it comes through in the book.
Well, I got, you know, I didn't know anything about her when I started working on it, but I just was drawn to her. I had a kind of feeling. Well, actually, here's another story. I'm telling you all my secrets today. So so when my ex-husband and I broke up, and by the way, I am happily partnered, so that's all been fixed. But but when we broke up, and he had this flat-screen TV that I hated over the fireplace, and he took the TV, good riddance, right? So I wanted to put something in that space that represented the woman I wanted to be now and that I hadn't been able to be with him. And I went to one of those art poster stores, and I bought this gorgeous poster of these lush, vibrant, sensuous orange poppies, and that became my symbol. Now, it wasn't until after I wrote the book that I looked at that again and I realized, oh my Lord, that's Georgia O'Keeffe. She had been speaking to me in my subconsciousness all that time. And so I clearly was meant to learn about her, which I then did. And the more I learned about her, the more she sort of told me where the story needed to go. And so what fascinates me in both books, and of course I have a third one that will be out next year, about using art as the kind of frame for in other words, you want to tell a story that is universal, that everyone can relate to. In Queen of the Owls, it's about how can I be a whole woman, mind and body, right? In The Sound Between the Notes, it's also how can I embrace the two parts of myself, nature and nurture, family and self, wholeness. It's really my theme. But telling this story in a unique way that hasn't been done before, so through O'Keefe's Art and Life or through the journey of a pianist and what it is to see the world through the eyes of a musician. So here's a spoiler alert. My new book, which won't be out for a year, is framed around glass blowing. So, like, this is so much fun for me to learn and then to let that new learning sort of work its way into this need to create books and stories for people. Am I making
sense? Yeah, you are. Because actually, I took up blacksmithing.
Oh my God, I love it.
The same thing. I just wanted to grow. I wanted to know. I wanted that feeling of, you're wonderful. And I must say, I just have to say, good for you taking off that flat screen TV, because I cannot stand walking in a room where the main focus is that flat screen TV and everybody sits there. And I mean, you have people over, and well, if you, in the old days, I mean, like before this, people would be over, and that flat screen TV, even if it's off, it's like it's there, it's a presence. And I don't have a flat screen TV in my living room because I mean I want it to be a living room. You know?
Well, exactly. I wanted something that really represented who I needed to be and, again, had been sort of not allowed to be in that relationship. So it was very deep, deeply personal for me. And the other thing with the piano is the other thing I did, so you mentioned the Schubert Sonata. It's very hard, but I felt like I owed it to Susanna, and I learned to play the second movement before publication date, so that I could know that from the inside. I try to do this in my books to know from deep in my body and my feelings, even though I haven't ever auditioned for a concert, you know, but to engage in the process of creating stories with as much of myself as I can. The other thing I wanted to say, Patsy, because I did tune into the last part of Bob's interview, which just, wow.
Oh.
Was that, you know, we've all been living this last 18 months through a really hard time. And stories have always been a source of healing and renewal. And so I really feel that we as writers are doing this in different ways, not to pretty the world up, but really to uplift the spirit, but because stories have always done this for people. So even though his book made you cry and mine is filling you with joy, I think we're all part of the same...
This wonderful storytelling. This is why I call the program Joy on Paper, because it is so joyful to put your words on paper, and it's also so joyful to read words on paper. And so that's, you know, it's all comes down to giving this kind of joy. And I was going to sit, I always, you know, come out with marketing ideas for authors. So many times I've helped authors with marketing plans. This is my natural instinct. And I mean, for example, I had one girl whose book, a very, very simple little mystery, but she features Elvis songs in it. And she had never really thought when she was doing marketing, when she was going out there, you know, to events and stuff, well, play some Elvis, you know, attract people, you know, put a poster up of Elvis and start talking why you included him in your novel. And I was thinking, you have like the dream marketing opportunity here. Because you play the Schubert second movement.
No, I'm not that good.
No, listen to me. You can go all across the country, once we start going across the country, and go to every major hotel lobby where they have a piano and sit down and start playing. And you'll draw a crowd, because when you play that song, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Oh God, isn't it incredible?
It's when you think of Schubert and you think of what he was going through and all of this work that he created, but particularly this last piece, people will be crowding around you. You'll have like an audience of 50 people, and then you can sell your books. And you say, by the way, I've got this suitcase full of books here.
Well, that is a great idea. And actually, Patsy, in the interim, while we're still not doing much in the way of live stuff, I do want listeners to know that if you go to my website, you can download I have a playlist. In The Sound Between the Notes, there's two playlists. One is all the classical pieces mentioned in the book, and the other playlist is all the country music mentioned, because there's a whole country music element from her birth family. So there's two playlists for anyone who wants, and they also can download free a whole collection of links to paintings and videos about Georgia O'Keeffe, including some interviews that she did. They're so amazing. So why not? Why not share?
Exactly. It is a wonderful, wonderful webpage, because you have all sorts of information. So
yeah,
people really have to go there and see that. And I just want to remind everyone that it's Barbara Lynn, L-I-N-N, and P-R-O-B-S-T. But you can find it easily. And when you get there, it's just full of information. And, of course, one of the things that we want to talk about while we have time is something that's coming up in a few days. And because you, of course, have this great background in, before you were writing novels, you were writing everything else, nonfiction, and doing blogging and all sorts of things. So you became deeply involved in the sort of publishing world. And you have a lot of information that you want to share with my listeners, because, as I said, many of my listeners are people who, and many started writing just in this pandemic-y period. They had not written, and then suddenly they find themselves, well, they have time, they're home, they're, you know, and they started writing, and they're coming to me all the time now.
Oh, wow.
Ever since, really, after about 9 months, I started getting these emails from people saying, I did it. I listened to you. I started writing. I'm ready to publish. you have to sort of explain to people the process. And I think you're an ideal person to explain, particularly because you're going to be giving a seminar that I think will be very helpful to all those listeners out there who are writers and who are starting to write.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, I didn't even realize that you were that you even knew about it. This is so kind of you. Yes, it is. I'm doing really
well. Not that I know about it. I'm gonna be watching you, because you give a heck of a seminar. I know that.
I do. I'm really good at it, I have to say. I taught college for many years, and so I really gave a lot of presentations. So I can say that I'm not the world's greatest pianist, but I'm a very good presenter. But anyway, this is for the amazing Jane Friedman. This is the first time there's been a really deep dive, comprehensive program about hybrid publishing. And what that is really the middle path, because there's a lot of people who don't want to self-publish. And I'm one of them. It's too much work. I don't want to have to learn how to do all this stuff. It's just, you know, I want someone who knows what they're doing to oversee. It's like if I wanted to build a house, I want a contractor who's going to find the best plumber and electrician and, you know, get the permits for me. I don't want to have to do all that. But at the same time, the notion of trying to get one of the big five publishing houses is so difficult. Almost nobody gets that. Maybe, honestly, a handful of people every year. The system is, in my opinion, seriously broken. And that's another topic. But there is a third way, which is a hybrid, which is it partakes of both paths. So you do work with a publishing house, but you are investing in yourself up front and taking home a much higher percentage of the royalties. It's not for everybody. You have to have a certain kind of temperament where you're out there and you believe that you can greenlight yourself. So I think it's worth learning about, and I love that people will know about this and who may not have known about this before. So, yeah, that's on Friday.
Yeah, well, it's on Friday, September 17th. It's from 1 p.m. to 2:15 p.m. And, you're charging $25, which is a joke, because I know people are going to be learning so much from you. And just being able to, afterwards, after you speak, then you answer questions, correct?
Yeah, and then they get the recording, they get the PowerPoint, they get the handouts. So if you can't be there live, you get all that stuff later from Jane. She's amazing. And I have to say, I really don't make anything. This is kind of like for the platform.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Now, the information about that, you would have to go to Jane Friedman. It's not on my website. I try to put things on there that are permanent and not time-limited. So,
Well, I will put it on my website so people can go there and find out, and I'll put it right there on the front page. It'll be there for the next few days so people can go and click on it. And it's always Jane Friedman's seminars are great, but you are particularly, I know you're one of the people that she's, you're sort of one of the go-to people that she has always on her, you know, her events. So we know that it's going to be good, and it's going to be something that will really help people, whether and afterwards they can decide. But you're right, to be a completely indie author is so difficult, and you have to put so much time and energy into it. And if you can have any bit of help, I think that, you know, it. One of the things about the hybrid publishing world is, and this is what you'll talk about, and you'll explain what the benefits are. So I do want to encourage people to do that and have a look at that. But, you know, I just, Barbara, it's just wonderful to talk to you. And I feel so simpatico with you, with your books, and just reading your books. I think everything that I love in, you know, in a book, and the story lines are just perfect. And so I'm going to say bye to you now, but you'll be back next year. And on our way out, I want to play something for you. But just one moment. That's it. Okay. I'm going to say bye to you. And you listen to this song now. Don't hang up. Okay. And you'll know why I'm playing it. And just my very, very best for you. And I will keep promoting your books. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
And everybody listen to this.
Okay.
Okay. People, if you don't listen to Schubert, you should. Really, you know, people listen a lot to Beethoven and Mozart, but there is in Schubert so much heart, so much soul, so much joy. And he suffered so much. I mean, his life was pitiful, just awful. But in all of that, in all that he went through, his music is glorious. It's just, if you have a playlist, and I have a playlist, I play certain songs at certain times of the day. Pick a Schubert. Pick a Schubert because, he deserves to be remembered, that's for sure. And perhaps you'll find that joy that he felt, where it came from his heart, from his soul, from some absolute magical place. But Schubert is really my favorite, actually. If I can pick, I always pick Schubert before even Mozart, because I just relate so much to his music. Anyway, it was wonderful to talk to Barbara Prost. She's fantastic. I will put up the information about her seminar, which is going to be on Friday. And it's well worth it. She's just fun. She's a hoot, and she'll give a good seminar. And you might want to, you know, check my website later today. I will put it up there, and you can go and register. And as she said, you can listen to it for a month and get all the details and also all the printouts. So anyway, whoa, what a day! Going from both Barbara's books are wonderful, and of course the wonderful book by Robert Dugoni, and it's called The World Played Chess. And I'm going to be sending this, Jim Lamb, I'm going to be sending you this book today, because I know that Jim Lamb was of course in Vietnam, and he's going to be We're going to have him on perhaps next week, and he's going to talk for a few minutes about his book, and also we're going to play some special message to, well, the years that have gone by. It's hard to believe. But I just want to thank him so much for everything that he's done for Joy on Paper over these years. And I just, you know, I am amazed. And when I think about it, it's been 6.5 years, and I've been so lucky to talk to so many of my favorite authors. And it's funny, you know, with Robert Dugoni, you know, you see him at things like BouchCon, and you're mostly talking about his thrillers or his you know, books on crime. But this standalone it's just unbelievable. It is really, really fantastic. Anyway, everybody, I just, again, want to thank you. Send me some more of your emails. I love these emails I've been getting. You've been really active. I don't know. And maybe I have to say my email more often. It's patsy.radio@gmail.com. And I love hearing the stories, both about the books that you that have, you know, really moved you, and the stories that and you tell me about why you like a particular book, and also your stories about that you've started to write, because this is a wonderful thing for me to hear. And I just want to encourage all of you, you know, you don't have to write a novel. You don't have to write a big, thick history book. You can write just a story, a simple story. You might write a children's story. You might write a cookbook. You might write a memoir. But to have your words on paper and to write it so that your family has it, you know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, I wish my grandparents had, my great-grandparents, well, yeah, my great-great-grandparents probably couldn't read or write. My grandparents could, but, you know, it would be wonderful if we had books from these people. So get busy, because remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries. Wake up, Hallmark! Call Carol. We need some new series. I've seen all the other ones many times. We need Carol J. Perry. Okay, everybody, say something nice to somebody today. Wasn't it nice that Bob Dugoni kept saying the word joyful? Yes, be joyful and say something nice to somebody. I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, and he will salute me because he... salutes me, because I should have been a general. I'd have been such a great general. Oh boy, I would have been better than all these other generals around. I can tell you that absolutely positively. I'm tough. I would have been great. And I would love to have that pension. My goodness. Okay, bye-bye now.